Well, I have the pleasure to introduce Dr. Ron Turco. Ron is a professor at Purdue, and of the many things he has done, I see he has relatively recently started the Environmental Sciences and Engineering Institute.
We're done with that.
Okay. Well,
you finished it.
Okay. Well, nonetheless, I will just let Ron take over, and he's going to talk to you about manufactured nanomaterials and their implication to soil function.
Thank you. The bar's here. Eldon, I'm in between you and the bar now. This is bad. So, all right. Is it possible to keep up? That's a question. Is it possible to keep up? You start looking out there at nanomaterials. You guys talked this morning about, already talked about different kind of things. We've seen different materials already discussed. Can we continue to do what I'm about to tell you I've done for everything that's manufactured? That's the question. I don't think it is. But that's the question. Is it possible? Can we keep up with these people who make stuff, I guess, is the question. And they're a very clever bunch of people out there making things and making new things and making new things out of old things and making old things out of new things. And how do we assess this? How do we keep track of the environmental impact of these materials is my question. And is it possible to keep up? Just keep that in mind. That's sort of my thought now on a lot of this. So if you look here, you got these new materials and you got environmental effects data occurring. And you have lots of folks who've published editorials. You've got people who've focused and there's a new article or so about review article on nanomaterials about every few months now. It's coming along and people are really starting to get a better grasp on things. But it's still a matter of we have more new materials coming out and going along than we do environmental fates data. And then if you look at something like environmental fates and degradation data, there's very little out there in terms of what's going on. So it's even more trying. And it's only a matter of time before we have some kind of exposure event. And that will refocus everything as the press will drag us into a what's going on situation, which could be great for business in some ways. I hate to say that sound that way, but it would be a situation that could potentially raise a lot of questions and raise a lot more interest in what's going on. But that's what's out there. We are capable of making things. We are capable. We have very clever people making things all the time, coding things, adding things on, turning things around. And is it possible to study every one of these things in every combination? Again, I do that right now, but can we continue to go that way? So, like Patricia showed you earlier, areas of concern for all this is sort of if you lay out a scenario like this, you can have manufacturing, you can have different processes going on in this. Biosolids, I think, are the big area, which we're focused on a bit in terms of where things will get concentrated. We got photoreactions, and I'll show you some photochemistry here from our group in a second. And what's going on, surface and subsurface soils, groundwater, rhizosphere processes. I have a student out right now looking at some nanometals in the plant uptake in rhizosphere situations. So it's interesting going on. But if you focus in a little further, and I stole this from a book I like to use in one of my classes and redrew it a bit. But if you look down into soil a bit, there's all kinds of interactions going on that we're not probably looking at very well. We've got the litter transformers and we got the food web going on and the ecosystem engineers all working in there. And we really haven't asked the question of those guys. Are you guys bothered by nanomaterials? We don't know. So we need to be sort of thinking about that in terms of what's going on in terms of cycling and nutrients in soil. And how are they going along? I was very happy to see Trisha's looking at the protozoa. That was very exciting to see that you can move them up like that. That's a good and bad thing, I guess. So the other question I have, and this is another question that we need to really think about in terms of all this work, in the bottle there, the yellow bottle, that's fullerene in a bottle. Just want to make sure you know what that is. It's either that or really kind of cloudy beer. And then on the left there are all the products so far that in this one picture at least, that contain nanomaterials of some sort. And when we're talking about environmental release, right, we work with the stuff in the bottle most of the time. The stuff that's going on the market is on the left. It's all these sort of formulated materials. It's all these things that contain nanomaterials. We have not addressed it's not completely true. There's one or two papers that looked at some of that. But we have not really significantly started to address the situation of the formulated materials and what's going on with those in the environment. So Is what we're doing now important in the future? I think it will be, but do we need to sort of re-question and readdress the situation in terms of the kinds of reactions that are going on, like Tricia mentioned on the coatings and glass and things that are coming off buildings? That's sort of a secondary effect question. You put a product out, it gets sort of altered and dropped on the ground. That's going to be significant in terms of what's going on out there. But again, we're sort of concentrated on the lovely side of the materials you can make up in the lab. So, what role will the environment play in these materials? And this is a sort of a possible scenario here of fullerene. Will it break down and turn into microbial biomass? Will it go to CO2? Will it go to new products? What will it do? This is the kind of question we're asking about fullerene. It doesn't want to respond very well to the question, but part of that situation was addressed by this group we put together at Purdue to look at solubility and sorption of materials, role of sunlight in materials, and then the response of bacteria and fungi and archaea in terms of the system. This is a grant that was just finished up from NSF and EPA. So I'm going to address a little bit of what we found in this program, and then address the tail end of this a little bit of our new work on some nanometals we've been looking at. So the question is all of this stuff. So just as some background and some findings from our project, so you have some notion of where these things sit in terms of the environment. This is some of Chad Jaffert's work from Purdue, part of our group, looking at C60 log KOW values. You need a good log KOW value to really understand environmental fates. And for C60, for actual, this is C60, not NC60, for those who keep track of those sort of things. Chad and students were able to differentiate a KOW of about 6.67, which puts it up pretty high. That's a pretty strongly sorbed material in the KOW world. If you look at its friends there, DDT and all the other guys, it's pretty widely retained. So that we do that was going on. We use that as part of an explanation for some other work that was mentioned earlier from our lab. The other thing that Chad has recently done is this is 209 work, and he's looking at the sorption of fullerene on saturated soils using sort of a partial alcohol mixture because these things are terribly insoluble. They don't behave real well, so you have to mix a little alcohol in there to help them out some. But Chad was able to look at the behavior of these materials on soil, which is something I prodded him to do because we were really desperate to understand what happens to C60 on soil surfaces in terms of sorption. And what we were able to determine was that basically you ended up with a KOC value of about 10 to the 7th liters per kilogram of organic carbon, or about 10 to the, somewhere in that same range for non-materials in water, and that you're going to end up with a high retention on soil surfaces for these fullerene materials. So basically, this is one of the three or four papers Chad's come out with on all of them. I think he's got one more they're working on right now, but these are all from our original grant group, our NERT project, looking at what behavior of C60. This took 4 years to do all this work, right? Are we going to do this for every nanomaterial? Well, I mean, it's going to be hard, and it's going to be expensive. It's a pretty expensive project to look at. So we need to start thinking a little differently about how we look at these nanomaterials in terms of their value. And the other question I ask is, are we, the scientific community, responsible for development of these environmental profiles for people's products? They're not putting up the money, fronting the money to do the exposure work. It's being kicked back in terms of NSF or EPA or somebody paying for all this exposure work while they're doing what's called profit-taking on new products. So there's a question I raise about how this work would be financed in the future. Anyway, sorry, I digress into politics occasionally. So Chad's also, his other major interest, Chad and Inez Waugh at Purdue, are also interested in degradation of materials in sunlight, and they looked at how these materials behave in the sun in terms of destruction, and the dark colored symbols are, forgot my pointer, these guys here, are all irradiated C60 materials in terms of their breakdown and degradation. So they are breaking down in sunlight, which is an interesting finding. So you get photo transformation of these materials, at least away from the C60 itself. And so if you look at that in a more schematic point of view, this is all starting in the same place, and your irradiation runs across the top, and the concentrations run through here, and this is just a color to give you an idea of what's going on. The TMs are mixed in there as well. And you start to see that you go from these larger crystals at the higher concentration as it reacts with sun into the smaller and smaller materials as they're sort of breaking down in the presence of the sunlight. So the sunlight does have an effect on C60, which is a solubilized form of C60. So this has a connotation or importance in terms of environmental fates work in the environment. What this also did was sort of cause us to think about what happens to C60 as it photoreacts. And this is something that Chad or other people have put this together, which Chad capitalized on. And basically what you're looking at is the hydroxylation of the C60 structure down here in water. So you end up with this hydroxylated C60 hydroxy material that's going on. So that was the question that then Chad was looking at, was what happens to that in terms of its behavior. At the same time in our group, we had an individual by the name of Tim Philly, who's a faculty member in Earth and Atmospheric Sciences, who was looking at C60 degradation by fungi, direct up fungi. He was inoculating wood blocks with fungi and trying to get them to break down C60. Turns out they don't really like C60, and you can't really encourage them very much to degrade C60. But, combined with what Chad was finding about the formation of these OH groups on the C60 in the sunlight, turns out fungi will use OHC60. So you can, I got some data here in a second, this is better summarized in this figure here. If the fullerene is actually sort of, the structure is sort of starting, you sort of decorate the outside with a few hydroxyl groups by photoreaction, and then the fungi will get excited about them and start using them. So the question we now have, and we're in the process of working on, will other parts of the microbial community carry out the same kind of reaction in terms of C60? OH, not just C60. So we're looking at some degradation right now in that regard. So basically, fungal transformation kind of looks like this, where this step right here, this initial step right here, is probably caused by light and not fungi, though we do think fungi can do this a little bit. But then you get fungal decomposition to CO2 once you form the hydroxylated version of C60. You don't see, it's sort of a, we think the sunlight step is much more significant than anything they can do, the fungi can do. But once you put C60OH into the system, the fungi will take care of it out to CO2. And what's that look like? We've done a lot of C13 work, and this is what Tim specializes in, looking at C13 evolution from these systems in terms of what's going on. So it gives us a tracking tool, which we didn't have in many of our early studies on soil, which we would have much preferred as a nice C14 C60. That would have been nice to have. But we didn't have that, so Tim has been looking at this with the C13 materials, which has worked out really well. And what you see here is this is some enrichment. This is pure C60, okay? This is phenol. This is the OH version, incorporation into the biomass. You don't see a lot of incorporation, a little bit with the white rots, But what you do see is over here is in terms of headspace, C13 in the headspace in terms of degradation. And you will, with white rot fungi, see breakdown of hydroxylated fullerene, which is, I think, the first time it's been shown to be biologically destroyed or attacked or altered by materials. And this is not done in soil. This is done on little wood chips with white rot fungi. It's a standard protocol procedure they use. It's been published. It's in ESNT. It just came out on what happens in the headspace in terms of this gas exchange. Only possible, again, because of this use of C13, we could see this. So this is sort of interesting. We get a combination, something I hadn't thought about, between looking at the solar stimulation of a material followed by a fungal attack on that material. It's not something, as soil microbiologists, we tend to really think about too often as a sequence of events, but it may be an important one in terms of what happens to some of these materials. So I want to talk a little bit about more of our own direct work in terms of microbial stuff in soil. A little less exciting than the degradation work Tim had, but nevertheless, it's mine, so you get to hear about it. So the soils we're looking at a couple of soils, high organic matter, low organic matter soil. We, again, use the same kind of pure material, fullerenes in solution, and it's formed by the standard procedures indicated here. And if you haven't worked with C60 in solution, it's a joy. You'll enjoy learning how to do it. It's great. So we use C60 and NC60 for most of our work. We've also been looking at single wall carbon nanotubes, which I'll talk about in a second. These are functionalized with hydroxy materials. We've looked at nanosilver, and now we're looking at nanogallium and nanoindium. And I'll explain what those are about in a second. But that's an interesting, those last two are very interesting metals. Need to be paying attention to them because they're playing a big role in commerce. And I think you're going to see a lot of it in the environment. So anyway, I'll come back to that in a second. So these materials are here. We then use a sequence of events that are pretty typical to everyone in the room probably in terms of what's going on. Phospholipid, we do biomass sizing with phospholipid. We look at three domains most of the time, bacteria, archaea, and eukaryotes. We look at functions in terms of enzymes, CO2, methane, where it's appropriate. And we, then we do this sort of a modified SIR procedure, substrate-induced response procedure, where we add glucose, C14 glucose, and look for effects on the formation of CO2 just as an indirect on impacts on microbial condition. This is from our first paper on this, and what you're basically seeing is no effect from C60 or NC60 on soil function. And Greg asked me how we got this published, and I'm just happy it got published. So it's a negative effects paper, but it's important because there was a negative effect on the material. And this has led us to look at, this is what actually led us to cause Chad to look at sorption of these materials on soil so we could understand what was going on in terms of their behavior. We think they're pretty well retained by the soil surface, though. It's an important controller on their bioavailability. So then we looked at also, we use this indirect effect, this modified SIR, where we would incubate over periods of time and then apply C14 glucose to the system to look at if there's some kind of internalized response going on or some kind of negative response that we're not seeing in the general respiration. And again, we saw no long-term effects on respiration from the system. So even with this approach, we used a couple of approaches. We've looked at different kinds of NC60. We've looked at THF alone, which is a common solvent for these materials. We've looked at all kinds of combinations and are pretty clear on the fact that C60 doesn't really seem to be bothering much in soil, though we haven't looked up the food chain too far, but it's at least at the basal levels, it's not really, basal level soil process, it's not impacting anything too dramatically. We also have done quite a bit with fingerprinting. This is just typical sequencing GDGE and then phospholipid analysis. Not seeing much there either in terms of even after 6 months of incubation. So it's showing this. This is something that got mentioned earlier on crystal size. We put together a very elaborate experiment looking at NC60, where we sized the particles and applied them to soil at similar concentrations and different size ranges. Because again, the general notion on this is, and there's some support for it in the pure culture world, that the smaller the particles, the smaller, the more they're going to be an effect. And we didn't really see, in soil at least, a response to NC60 crystal size and expect effect on soils. So again, this was using our SIR procedure to look at effects. We didn't see much going on against the control in these systems. So crystal size didn't really seem to have much of an impact on the behavior of the materials. We're also very interested in anaerobic systems, and this is my colleague Larry Nyes and I work on this. We look at biosolids, and if you notice, these are 30 and 50,000 parts per million. This is a true number impact. This paper just came out. I should have the reference on there, sorry. It's Nyberg and Nyes and Turco, I think, on the paper. And we're looking at biosolids and gas formation, and this is inclusion of C60 at different concentrations, the 30 to 50,000 parts per million. No real effect on biogas formation, which is better illustrated here. We looked at, a little lower concentrations. We didn't see much at all in terms of normalized gas production. So again, C60 in an anaerobic biogas situation where we looked at gas production, we really didn't see a lot of effect on the structure, the function of the population, nor did we see any much of effect at all when we started looking at gene patterns in the eukaryotic and the bacterial profiles. So this is our, and then we also have an archaea one, which we didn't see anything in either. So these anaerobic systems are not being impacted by C60 in any major way in terms of their functioning. This is a single wall carbon nanotubes, where this is something we've just finished up and we're in the process of getting ready to submit somewhere. There's a number of kinds here in terms of the structure and function on the outside of the materials. And the AP is as produced. When you buy single wall carbon nanotubes, they show up in a bottle, and they also come along with a whole lot of metal. Okay, that's something you need to know about when you buy carbon, unless you buy the more expensive kinds, which we didn't buy. The single wall carbon nanotubes can have a lot of contaminant in them from the manufacturer. Turns out these are, by weight, almost 40% metal. So it's a really high concentration of metal into these systems. We used them as we got them to sort of simulate a spill event. These functionalized guys, these guys here, are all pure carbon. The metals are all washed out of these, and they just have different numbers of hydroxy groups on the outside. So they're functionalized. They have a different behavior. And what you're seeing here is that you don't see, this is just straight up respiration, you don't see any major differences between these systems. A little bit of suppression, but not statistically different from the control. Drummer's a high organic matter soil. Tracy's a low organic matter soil, just to orient you there. So we looked at substrate-induced response at 3 hours. This is where we use C14 again and threw it in behind the materials. And this is incubation time. Then we would go in and throw the C14 in and look at the response. And again, you don't see any major impact on the systems from the presence of the carbon nanotubes with time. So they're not doing something, they're not sneaking around on you or anything, at least initially here in terms of what we're seeing. And even in the presence of the metals, as produced, we don't see much of a suppression. Nor do we see a suppression in biomass, again, for any of these carbon nanotubes. So the carbon nanotubes are sort of following the same pattern we saw with the fullerenes in terms of their behavior in soil. Not a lot of negative response, I guess, is probably the easiest way to say it. Greg, I'm going to have trouble with this paper, I bet. But. Oh, no. I'm going to keep trying, Greg. That's the goal here. So we don't see... This is all good news for the carbon tube manufacturers of the world. We don't see much of an effect at all on biomass. This is phospholipid biomass in the system. Again, in the patterns of DNA in the systems, the 16S, we don't see a lot of profile effects. We see some little bits of stuff going on. We're looking at some sequencing on that now, but nothing major. And in the 18S, we don't see anything either. So, in general, we don't see a lot of negative effects. And I just want to get this other little bit of information out to you real quick here. A few slides on this. This is silver. These are silver, gallium, and indium products. This is a silver, nano silver coated toilet paper, which I thought was an interesting material. This actually does exist. It can be purchased, which has got some issues as far as I'm concerned. But that's beside the point. This is a gallium. Gallium is used in LED lighting. Okay, it's a high-efficiency metal to use in these new LED lights. It's a very, very effective part of that sequence of making light out of LEDs, and you're going to see a lot of it used, is what people who work with this tell me. So, and this is a combination of cadmium, indium, and then gallium, and these are solar cells. These are flexible solar cells, another big product area for these metals to go into. And when you look at the literature, what you find out, silver's a little different, but gallium and indium, there is really not much exposure data at all on these metals. In fact, I would say there's none in terms of what goes on in soil. They've been around in soil. They are out there, but we're sort of ventured into this to look at in terms of what's going on with these systems. That's a 6-inch light across there, and these are put in panels to produce from LED. So it's kind of an interesting work. And these are a cool little solar panel. It's very flexible, which causes them to be really useful. So I want to show just a bit. This is a data splashing, I guess, probably the best way to look at it. This is nano silver applied to soil, sort of ish response in terms of what's going on. This is Tracy. This is a medium textured organic matter soil. It's 30 days. Now, which is interesting here, this is Claremont. This is a light textured soil, very little organic matter. And what you're starting to see is effect from nano silver, which doesn't surprise me, but the degree to which the effect occurred was pretty tremendous in terms of the response. So nano silver applied to soil, especially in a low organic matter soil, shows a fairly significant negative profile in terms of the response. And then if you start looking at the patterns of DNA and what's going on and the response in the system, you start seeing loss of functional bands in simple DDGE primer sets. So you are seeing impact on diversity from nanosilver in soil, which that's interesting to me because we haven't seen this with the fullerenes or the carbon nanotubes, so it's a negative result. So we're good to go here. The nanosilver is this is pretty high levels, but it is affecting the patterns in the system, and we're doing a bunch of other stuff here on this project, but it's showing some negative effects. Now we also have been looking at the gallium, nanogallium, which is another one of those situations where you start buying these things, you're like, wow, that was expensive, that little bottle of stuff. And what are we going to do with it? We're going to throw it in soil and look at CO2 evolve. This is good. This is a good plan. So we looked at 0, 1, 10, and 100 application. Because, again, this goes back to that original question I asked about how can we keep doing this? Because I don't even know what the application rates of these things should be to soil. There's not really a rate on the bottle. It doesn't say when applying to soil add 6 pounds per acre. But it is an important to start looking at this. This is the light texture soil. This is the Tracy soil down here. This is the heavier texture soil. And this is typical CO2 patterns we see with these two soils, so we're pretty comfortable with the response. Not a lot of significant differences in here in terms of CO2 response for gallium. Indium sort of shows the same kind of pattern. This is even more expensive. So this is down here. This is the Tracy, and this is the drummer again, high texture. We don't see a lot of significant difference in terms of what's going on. But I will leave you with this. When we start jacking up the rates into the thousands, and this is very new data, this is why it's not wildly, I don't like its display method here, but if you see down here, this is a 1,000 part per million addition here of indium, and we do starting to see some suppression of the CO2 response in the system. So, and it is significant at some points in terms of its capacity to suppress. So there is a negative response in general respiration to the presence of these nanometals, and this is not silver, this is other metals, so this is interesting, we think this is sort of an interesting track to be on, given that everybody I've talked to in our nano center who work on LED lights think that they're going to be the next one of the biggest things around in terms of new products out there because of the way they're highly energy efficient. So in conclusions, work on surface alteration of nanomaterials shows changes are possible. This is from Tim and Chad in terms of that. So we're rethinking the need for activation of these materials as part of the degradation profile. So solar may be an important part of the degradation of some of these organic nanos materials. Early efforts have looked at the impact on soil systems have shown few effects from the carbon materials. We need better detection methods to understand what's going on, C13, C14. I'd love some C14 fullerene. That would be just people who work for me don't like the idea, but I think it'd be a great addition to our understanding where this stuff is going. I would like to know where it goes in soil, really. It's very difficult to understand is it sorbing? Is it matriculating into the organic matter? What's it doing in there? So it's a really important question. And with the nanometals, the impacts are much more interesting in terms of what's going on with nanometals. So I will stop at that point. Thank you.